This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Warning. The following podcast, which contains strong language and mature content, is unsuitable for children or for the faint of heart. The subject matter discussed will be frightening and graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Three spooked girls.
When you want to hear about the paranormal, you get the spook. Girls, true crime that makes you hypothermal, with the three spooked girls. Stabby snippets will give you dreams. Tara and Jessica will make you ask great, along with the spooked girls. Bring on the slaughter. We on that haunted ground.
Spooked girls.
The three spooked girls.
Hey, spooksters, and welcome back to another episode here on Three Spooked Girls. My name is Jessica, and as always, I'm joined by my favorite ghoul friend, Tara.
Hey, spooksters.
Today we are recapping the third episode of Quiet on the Set, and we are going to be dealing with some very, very heavy content. So I'm doing our disclaimer right the fuck up front. If you are not in a place where you can handle talking about childhood trauma, sexual assault, childhood sexual assault, any kind of like
grooming,
anything like that, please see your way out today.
Please.
Because your mental health is more important than you listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
Facts on facts. Every single day we'll ride or die that theory.
We have other episodes that are much lighter. Go check out a paranormal episode or something, please.
Yes.
Please.
Or a really like funny, like we did the true crime thing, something like that. Like do a fun one.
Ooh, yeah. Like the maple syrup.
Mm-hmm. That one's one of my favorites.
Did I cover that cop that ate the edible?
Yes.
Yeah. Go listen to the weed one. I mean, we're almost to 420. It's April when you guys hear this.
Oh my God. Before we do that, we have to talk about 420 this year. So 420 is 420 2024.
Yeah.
It's literally front ways and back ways.
I love that.
I don't know what that word is. I can't remember it.
I can't remember, but I know what you mean.
4.20.24.
Oh my God. That's great. I love that.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited.
I love this.
And it's my cat's birthdays.
Oh.
And it's my work anniversary.
It's a fantastic day.
And it's my fourth work anniversary.
Oh my God. That's funny. I love that.
I know. I'm like, this is great.
That's going to be the best day ever.
Best day of the year. Little Parks and Rec for you guys. Literally, this episode is titled, episode three is called The Darkest Side. If this isn't something you can handle, please. We love you. We want to create a safe space, but this might not be the safest of spaces today. So sharing up front. So the episode starts and it's talking about Drake Bell, because if you remember in the end of the last episode, he literally walks out, sits down and sighs the episode's open or it closes. It starts in like January of 2004 and it's talking about Drake and Josh, which was a very, very fucking popular show.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first time in a while that we had seen like a buddy boy comedy. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. And so we know from the last episode that Brian Richard Peck, who is Brian Peck, who is a dialogue coach and acting coach for kids, has been arrested under sexual assault charges. And we get the preview that it's Drake. The interesting thing about this is like the star, like the child stars that they're interviewing on the show are like, it wasn't as big a scandal as you thought, like Brian being arrested.
No.
It was just very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was so well kept. And if you watch the documentary, know that this is Drake's first time publicly talking about this outside of therapy and outside of with the police and in court. And like I mentioned in the last episode, many of the people on that were part of the documentary were sitting in the room not knowing that Drake Bell was the person. And I don't know if they knew until it came out or if they were told because of production, but most of them were in the room like, I have no clue who this fucking is. But around Nickelodeon, it wasn't a huge scandal. It was just like, he was there, this happened, he's no longer there. Drake started acting when he was about 5 years old. He started booking a lot of commercials. And let's just say Drake is like one of the cutest little children.
Oh my God, adorable.
I would have been like, yeah, I'm going to buy my, like if I had a little, if I got a boy and I was like watching like a, I don't know, like an Oshkosh B'gosh, did I say that right? I don't know if I did.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial. And he was like, and I'd be like, I'm going to buy my kid that clothes because look how adorable that little boy is.
Yeah.
He also was like, on Pokemon commercials. And I was like, oh my God, just like flashback. I was like, oh my God, I remember that commercial. Like he was around. And what I didn't know is when I was watching this documentary, I like looked up Drake online and I was like, oh my God, he's like literally like 2 months younger than me. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So basically how he gets they talk about how he got into it and it's so cute. And we meet Joe Bell, who is Drake's dad. And basically Joe and his wife, they never really mention his mom's name anywhere in the documentary.
No.
Like I watched it twice and I never heard. They just refer to him as like my ex-wife. So she probably didn't want to be named.
Mm-hmm.
They were going through a very contentious divorce and he was looking for something to do with Drake. And he was flipping through, this is adorable. I remember seeing these parenting magazines that were like local to like your area. And he was like flipping through it and he saw an open call, kind of like bring your kid to audition. So he talked to Drake about it. Drake seemed really excited because like Drake says, like, I just love to make people laugh. He was just kind of that kid who was like, you know, I'm pretty sure if his parents had a video camera out, he was probably dancing in front of it, like for that kind of attention. And so he was like, let's do it. And this made Joe and Drake really, really close because they started going to auditions. He started, you know, after a while booking things, they would say he would like literally like go to school. They'd pick him up. They'd go audition. They'd get home around like 10 p.m., 12, and they'd do it all again the next day. So he was in commercials. He was in several, like he was in Jerry Maguire, which I think is so cute when his dad talks about it. He's like, he wouldn't flip off the camera. So if you look, it's his ring finger. And then I was like, oh my God, it is his ring finger. I just think that my brain filled it in. He was on an episode of Seinfeld and he was just kind of like always hovering like just outside of stardom, essentially. And then the Amanda show starts coming up and he auditioned and Drake was one of the supporting cast. He was the male supporting cast member. I fucking loved him as Totally Kyle. Like when I'm so glad that that was the one they used for his sketches because it was so funny. And he was also into that physical slapstick comedy. Like he and Amanda used to do this one where they were like hillbillies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that one a lot too.
And like she would like hit him with something. It was always like
like random shit. I think like it was like a fish one time or something. Like
it was always something random. It was always like, knock, knock, who's there? Fish. And you're like, fish who? I'm going to hit you in the face with a fish. It was always, that was the joke. Like every time.
Yeah.
And it killed. I was like, I'm still thinking like, that's hilarious.
This shit's funny.
So he gets on set and this is like the first time he has like an, like this is the dream, is to be on a sitcom or to be on something that's like every single week he's getting a paycheck. And he lived in Orange County and where they shot was like not in Orange County.
Yeah.
It was the, I think still in the Paramount studios.
Yeah, they hadn't switched yet. Yeah.
He had to drive like an hour every day to work, but he loved it. And so everything is really good. And then they switch studios from the Paramount lot, which we talked about in the first episode with Christy and Jenny. But this is how it affects Drake, is they switch to Nickelodeon on Sunset. And this is when Drake meets Brian Peck. So Drake meets him when he's 13 or 14. And the thing with Drake is he loved old Hollywood. He loved like black and white shows. So he liked I Love Lucy, Abbott and Costello. He just loved all of these like little old timey feels, right? And Brian also really liked it. So they would have these conversations. And Drake actually says it was like sitting down and watching, kind of like having a living documentary of old Hollywood. And so they kind of started getting along. And, you know, like I mentioned in the last episode, Brian has quite the laundry list of stars he's worked with. He worked with Leonardo DiCaprio on Growing Pains, the cast of Boy Meets World. So he had a lot of credit to his name, and he would also be an acting coach. And so, you know, Drake is newer to the industry. Like, he doesn't have a ton of big roles under his belt. So he was like, okay, I want to do acting. I want acting classes, and Brian's offering, let's do it. And Joe was like, okay, cool. But Brian would only do acting classes at his house. And this is also like Brian would also have parties. And Joe talks about like they would go to the parties together, and parents were always invited to Brian's party, which is very strategic. So Brian and Drake had built this trust between each other. Drake had no reason to believe that Brian would do anything to hurt him. So Joe was very attentive to Drake. If Drake needed like a beard put on, Brian was like, oh, I'll help. Or like, oh, I'll put the shirt, like help you get the shirt on or whatever it was. And Joe was just like, this is weird. Like, you're an adult man. This is my child. You shouldn't fucking be touching him. And so he kind of mentioned it to an exec or somebody, a producer. Hey, you know, he's just spending too much time. He's too touchy. And they kind of showed in this video of Brian and Leonardo DiCaprio, and you know, Leo's talking to him, and he's got starts with his hand on Leo's shoulder, and Leo's also holding Brian's arm, and it's very kind of mirrored. But then all of a sudden you see Brian like run his arm or his hand down Leo's arm and then like kind of cup his elbow and then down his forearm, where Leo's hand doesn't move. It's just literally like stays still. Joe would say that he would come in and give like Drake hugs, or like hug him from the back or the side, or he would come around and like kind of like side hug him, but not by like, not like the way you do at church camp, which is like up here. I don't know if you guys are, you know, but more like around his waist, which is a little bit more intimate of a situation. And Joe was like, no. So he went and talked to producers, executives, and someone was like, we don't know if you know this, but Brian is gay. Could you just be being homophobic? And I think Joe is just a genuinely good person. And so he was like, maybe I am. Maybe I'm picking that up. And, you know, because they were like, he is just touchy-feely. And so he was like, probably like, oh my God, like, I just misread this situation. He's just a touchy-feely person. Maybe I'm just reading too much into this. Maybe it's not predatory. It's like parental, that kind of thing.
Right. Like nurturing type of shit. Yeah.
But it's still like,
it's still weird.
But he still was like, I'm fucking watching you, Kit. Like, watching you.
Yeah.
Basically, Joe would never be out of Drake's eyesight. Suddenly, other parents are like ostracizing Joe. Producers, like Dan, is distancing himself from him. And Brian and Drake are staying really, really close. At this point in time, the Drake and Josh show is kind of pitched because they're doing this like sketch on, I think it was the Amanda Show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was on the Amanda Show. And there was like some shrimp had fallen from the sky. And I think I remember watching this as I thought it was hilarious. And they're like fighting. They like get into this huge physical fight. And another producer looks at Dan and goes, this is your buddy comedy you want to do.
Yeah.
This is what you do. And so the conversations with Dan and Drake and Joe start being like, we should get this rolling. We should do this. So Joe and Drake are so fucking excited. Like, this is the, not only am I a series regular, I'm a supporting actor on the Amanda Show, soon I'm going to be like the co-star of my own show. And they're super excited. But Brian, being the master manipulator here, does something where he starts to make Drake question his dad. So he basically starts telling Drake, you know, your dad really shouldn't be your manager. Like, I can just hear him be like, it's not a good situation. Parents tend to like take their kids' money. It's never good for the kid. And I can just kind of see Brian saying the same thing. Joe really didn't take this seriously. He was just like, what the fuck ever? Like, you know, whatever, we're good. Then weirder things started happening. The same time that Drake's career, acting career, is taking off, he also has his first band playing all over Southern California. And it was like, I think it was a way that like Nickelodeon was also like pushing Drake out more and more to build like that fan base for Drake and Josh, was to have him be this rock star. Because if you think about it, over on the other side, Disney, they would start pushing people out, like the whole Lizzie McGuire era.
Her music, yeah.
Raven Simone, like, they all had these, like, music careers in addition to this. So Drake was, like, the answer to this. So Drake said that, like, every once in a while, like, Dan would come, but it would be, like, have to be, like, close. So it'd be, like, you know, probably, like, less than, like, a 20-minute drive, Dan would show up type thing. But Brian would drive all the way to San Diego to watch him. And Joe talks about the fact that he got the band into the Strawberry Festival. They rode in the cars at the beginning, like Tara did in high school with her crown.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was this big Strawberry Festival. Like, we had the Olive Festival. So it was like this town's annual festival. They were there. The band was there all day to play. And Brian showed up with his friends and followed him everywhere. Like, they were little fucking groupies. Adult.
So weird.
Men. 14, 15 year old boy.
Following children.
Mm-hmm. So weird. For Drake's 15th birthday, Brian was like, oh, you know what? I'll host it at my house. And Joe was like, I don't fucking want this. Like, absolutely not. But Drake was like, Dad, all of my friends that I'm going to invite to this live near Brian and we live an hour away.
And that's like actual logic. Like, that does make sense, you know?
Right. Which is why I think a lot of this things that got past Joe, because they were logical. And it was like, people were like, no, 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 not that, but this. And he was like, oh, okay, I get it. So basically, Drake has his 15th birthday there. Joe is unhappy about it. As they're unloading the car from Drake's birthday, like, a bunch of cards can be seen in like a bag of gifts. And he opens them up and they're from Brian's friends and they're all like adult content in them to a 15-year-old. And he was like, Drake, what the fuck is, like, I'm sure he wasn't like, what the fuck is this? But I'm sure he was like, Drake, what is this? And Drake was like, I have no idea. I don't know. I didn't even know I had those. So he was like, this, I don't like this. And Joe started making it really fucking difficult for Brian to be around Drake. At this point, the atmosphere on set has turned against Joe. No one likes him. No one wants him there. People are whispering in Drake's ear that he's like hurting his career. And Drake trusts Brian because at this point in 2004, 2003, 2002, Leonardo DiCaprio is one of the biggest names in Hollywood. And the fact that he worked with him is impressive. You look at Boy Meets World, that had a fucking long ass run on Disney. So Drake trusted him and Drake started to avoid Brian. So he would like, you know, go to his mom's more often. And Brian leveraged this as much as he could. And he told Drake's mom that Joe is hurting his career, that he shouldn't be his manager, and basically formed this like army against Joe to get Drake away from Joe. And they were successful because at this point in time, Drake basically fired him through his mom. It was like, tell Dad I don't want this anymore. Oh my God, Joe starts crying at this point. And I'm just like, ugh. I will not cry again. Because the first time it happened, I texted her. I was like, Joe's crying and I'm crying. It was so bad. He was like, I'm going to do whatever my son wants. If I'm hurting my son's career, I need to step back. But as he's handing over everything to Drake's mom, he gives her a warning. Do not let Brian Peck near our son unsupervised. She was like, nope, I'm going to do the exact opposite. Because Drake's mom didn't like to drive and they lived an hour fucking away from where he worked. And this was in between a time of the Amanda show and the Drake and Josh show. So he was having to work in between. So he was going on auditions. Brian would come pick him up and they would go on auditions and they'd be there all day. And then you'd be like, you know, I'm not going to drive you home tonight because like it's like midnight, which is also logical.
Right.
Because if you think about it, it's not like, yes, he's going to drive an hour. So he gets Drake home at 1:00, but then Brian has to then drive back an hour, which puts him home at 2:00.
Right. And if he's already a trusted adult that you're going to let take your kid for the whole day, of course that would make sense.
And it kind of seemed like Brian was keeping Drake's mom apprised of what was happening. He would also take Drake to Disneyland and kind of like spoil him and just kind of like do all of these things that like kind of give like dad vibes, like, you know, dads will take their kids to Disneyland and things like that. But it would be like Brian and his friends.
Right.
Take a 15-year-old boy to Disneyland. It would make sense if like Brian was like, okay, we're going to do an outing as a cast. But at this point, that's not what was happening. Basically, everywhere that Drake needed to go, Brian took him. Because he's 15, he can't drive himself. And so he started staying the night at his house. And this is, I'm going to put trigger warning right here, just so that everyone knows, this is where we're going to start talking about the abuse. We don't go into any specifics of this because of the fact that Drake doesn't go into specifics of this. Drake said that one morning he woke up. He slept on the couch when he was at Brian's house. He said that he woke up and Brian was sexually assaulting him. Drake said, I don't know. I didn't know what to do. I froze. he panicked. He was like, I could get up and run away, but like, I'm an hour away from my mom and I'd have to call her and she'd have to come get me. And you're 15. You're not thinking clearly. This person that you trust is hurting you and, you know, is putting you in a position where you don't know what to do. My heart breaks for this, from Drake. And hearing this and seeing like the last, like I would say like 6 or 7 years of Drake's life, things make so much more sense now.
Yeah.
And so Drake didn't know how to get himself out of the situation because he couldn't, even afterwards, he couldn't be like, I don't want to be around Brian because people would be like, why? And Brian was like, I'm so, so sorry. Like, I didn't mean for this to happen. I won't do it again. And so it was basically like Drake had no way out of the cycle of abuse and the abuse would get worse. In fact, his exact words were extensive and brutal. When they asked Drake, he didn't really want to go into it, which is totally understandable. But he says, why don't you think of the worst thing someone can do to you in a sexual assault? And there's your answer. He also went on to say, how did I survive this? And I think a lot of it was that he felt like, you know, he's in this situation where he feels like he owes Brian a lot because he's been there. I think it's just, what do I do if I don't? And he called it a big giant secret that he prayed that it would stop.
Mm. Well, and you have to think too, also because he's male, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people think victims are just female, but it's a very, very real thing for boys and men too.
And grooming is such a big thing.
Yes.
As someone who myself was groomed, you don't notice it.
No.
It's the trust you build with someone who's grooming with you is the reason that abuser in my life never saw charges.
Right.
Because there is this sick and twisted mind game where even though you know it's not your fault, you think of yourself as this person who allowed this to happen to you because you were either stupid or naive or what. And then you don't feel the way out. Now, Drake was like, I don't want this. But in my case, I was being groomed to fall in love with someone. And like, you look at the Jason Handy, that's kind of what was happening. No one was really getting it. And Drake was kind of like stuffing it down. Well, about this time, Drake gets a girlfriend.
Oh, this mom.
Oh my God. 100% the best mom in the world.
MVP.
And for this documentary, yes. And you know, you, when you're young and you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a significant other, you're like, I want to spend as much time with them as I possibly can. And that's what was happening. And so Brian had wanted to take Drake to Disneyland and had made these plans with Drake. But Drake was like, I'm not fucking going to Disneyland with him. No, no, no. And he chose to go hang out at his girlfriend's house. So he starts calling Drake's cell phone over and over and over again. And he's not answering. And then he tracks down Drake's girlfriend, because I'm sure that they had Drake's girlfriend's phone, you know, someone at the company probably did, you know, in case that's where he is and they need to call him to set or something, you know, or that he called his mom and got it, something like that. But he starts calling Drake's girlfriend's house and the mom answers and is like, Drake, the phone's for you. And Drake gets on the phone with Brian and he's like, yeah, man, I'm sorry. I must have double booked. I'm really, really sorry. Like, I'm going to hang out with my girlfriend, have a good day or night or whatever.
Try to play it off. Yeah.
And he hangs up the phone. Brian's really mad. He's like raging on the other end of the phone. He's like yelling, screaming. And he keeps calling back after they hang up. And Drake's girlfriend's mom was like, hey, Drake, can I talk to you in the kitchen for a second? And he was like, sure. And she's like, what's going on? And he tries to play it off like, oh, you know, he's just upset because like, I guess I promised to go to Disney or whatever. And she's like, no, no, no. What's going on? Because like he said in the documentary, it took her all of 6 seconds to figure out that this 40 something year old man is calling her child's boyfriend, who is also a child. She calls his mom. The fucking balls of this woman is so big and so lovely.
Hell yes.
Yes, lady. She's like, calls his mom and is like, I'm taking him to therapy. They go to therapy and he basically says like, he kind of plays it off saying like, yeah, he's a little creepy, but I like want to distance myself from him. I'm probably sure the therapist gave him some sort of like, whatever, like just stare clear of him then. But this was all so, so calculated because Drake believed that everything that was happening to him career-wise was because of Brian. When we look at like how people thought were like indebted to Dan, same with Brian and Drake. The other thing was is they had shot the pilot for Drake and Josh and something wasn't working, so they had to reshoot it, which opens an opportunity to recast. You guys know that Tara and I love Gilmore Girls. When they shot the first pilot of Gilmore Girls, the character Dean was played by a different actor and the character Sookie was played by the woman who would play Drella, which in real life is married to the guy who plays Jackson, which I think is so cute. So Brian was trying to convince Drake to convince Dan to make him the dad. Drake was like, oh, I have a way out of this. I just won't do that.
Right. Like, fuck no, dude.
And I guess Brian was just being so aggressive about it. One day he's on the phone with his mom and he says, I don't even know what happened. I just fucking snapped and told my mom. And he tells her everything. And even though she missed a shit ton of clues, the second that she hears, she does the right thing and calls the cops. He's home. He's sitting there. He tells the detectives everything. He said an excruciating honesty about every single time it happened to me. That's what he had to do with the cops. The cops were like, well, we need Brian to confess because at this point it's your word against his word. We need his word. I don't know if there was evidence or anything on there, but basically he said it reminded him of like a video, like a movie. They had this phone that was connected to a tape recorder that was like that. And so he calls Brian. Brian doesn't pick up right away. He keeps calling back. Brian picks up the phone. Drake is like, look, man, I'm really fucking struggling with this. Like, I don't know what happened. I feel broken. I feel stressed. I feel like, you know, I'm in distress. Why did this happen? And Brian just fucking launches into a full confession of this. Full confession.
Idiot, but good.
But he's being recorded. And he keeps asking, are we being recorded? Are we being recorded? And he's fully launched into this. Then Brian gets arrested. Drake is really stressed out at this point because, like, he can't tell anyone this is happening. This is, like, Brian's been arrested. People around Nickelodeon on Sunset, they know Brian's been arrested. They don't know what's happened. They're, like, trying to figure it out. He's losing hair. And he's, like, you know, he feels both relief and stressed when he's finally, like, in jail. But he also hoped that no one would ever figure it out that it was him.
Yeah, because since he was a minor, didn't they just put, like, John Doe or something?
Yeah. They do that for a lot of like minor cases because especially Drake was in the public eye.
Yeah.
This would have like changed everything in his career if they had put it out there. I want to also say this. This was during 2004. And I'm going to talk about this more in the next episode as well. That recap is that we victim blamed so much then. It's why like I never came forward about things that happened in my life because I thought it was consensual. It wasn't consensual. I was a minor. You know, the person grooming me at one point in the middle of grooming me dated someone younger than me, like publicly dated this person younger than me. And I'm like, this is all this big thing that like you get manipulated into. And I understand why he was losing hair and he was not doing well and that he wouldn't want people to know because it would be so hard to deal with. Dan calls Drake and is like, because they all know that this has happened to someone on set. And Drake is honest with him and is like, yeah, it's me. And Dan was like, oh my God, are you okay? My issue with this is that nobody told Dan Schneider it was Drake because they weren't allowed to say who it was. Drake is like, I don't think executives at Nickelodeon knew who it was. They just knew it was someone. Predators can recognize predators. And he had worked with Brian long enough to know that Brian was a predator. There's no way, I don't care if it's speculation or not, this is the cross I will die on, that Dan Schneider was complicit in Brian being a predator and Jason Handy.
Oh, for sure. Because it's like, especially the stuff that he did and all the like, you know, subliminal sex jokes and fucking inappropriate shit, like he fucking knew.
Predators recognize predators. Another thing that kind of positive in this time in Drake's life is that he and Joe reconnected. And this broke my heart. Drake calls his dad and is like, did you see they caught him? And he was like, oh my God. And he was just like, Joe said, I'm so glad he wasn't able to get his hands on you, to Drake. And Drake was like, I couldn't tell him. Like, we had just grown back together. This would have hurt him. And he was like, my dad is an extremely emotional person. And he was. They asked Joe, like, when you found out that this was Drake, how did it make you feel? And he's like, I was devastated. He's like, my life has not been the same since. I have never stopped hurting from this because Joe knew. And this is the thing. The reason why Brian got rid of Joe is predators remove protectors.
Exactly. It goes back to that cast member's mom that was being like, what the fuck on all that?
Exactly.
Same thing. Yeah.
It is predators remove protectors. And that's what he did. He narrowed in that Drake's mom was weaker than Joe. And he was like, I am going to use this to my advantage. And this might be why. Let's hope and pray that Drake is his only victim. I don't believe it.
Not for a minute.
I don't fucking believe it at all. But it was so easy for him to do because he had everyone around him trusting him. He was a master manipulator. He's a narcissist. How could anyone want to hurt? How could anyone suspect Pickle Boy? And so they had to wait at this point for court. And Drake threw himself into Drake and Josh, which I think helped him. I think it helped him have a purpose, something to do. But that was the front he was putting on because he was able to go and work. Brian wasn't there. It was really a place where he felt protected. Dan had been so supportive of during this time, but he started becoming very self-destructive and self-loathing. And he turned to alcohol and substance abuse, which a lot of child actors do. And I think when you're starting to hear this, like when you hear that, like Lindsay Lohan, like they're like, oh, she went crazy, or Hannah, or like
Miley Cyrus. Yeah.
Miley Cyrus. Thank you. I was like, why can't I only think Hannah Montana? You know, like
Hannah Montana.
Miley Cyrus, you know, Miley Cyrus, like they all go through these things because they were fucking traumatized as kids. Even people who aren't as traumatized in the same way. We turn to alcohol and substance abuse. It happens.
Yeah.
And we look at their lives and then go, oh, they spiraled out of control. What tipped them into the spiral? Like, we talk about Amanda Bynes on this so much. What tipped her to go out of control?
Exactly.
Because people in her life were abusing her and she didn't have the support to handle it.
Right.
Nickelodeon was really pushing Drake to be a role model to young men because he was this goofy guy who seemed really, I love the way he described his character. He was like a guy who thinks he's all like cool and that, but he's not real smooth, you know? And I think a lot of teenage boys related to that. They were like, I think I'm really cool, but I'm really freaking awkward, because we all were awkward at 14 and 15 years old. This is like in the part where they talk about the executives and how the executives like didn't really know who it was, which goes back to my whole thing about predators spotting predators, because like fucking Dan knew that it was Drake. And you know, and Drake talks about there was like no therapy for this. Like Nickelodeon wasn't rolling out the carpet to be like, let's get you mental health, let's get you help, none of that. So basically this episode ends that they're gonna go to court in October of 2004. And they're going to have a verdict. So we will end the episode here and we will be back for our part four. It's not going to be our final one because there's episode five
coming,
but it will be the final one in this series
for now.
Right now.
well,
actually, no, because no, the other
we're going to do five.
I take that all back because five is going to come back before this one even airs. So we'll be fine. Okay. So with that, we will see you back here in our next episode. Bye, guys.
Bye.